Right. Quite an interesting interview coming up now. It's with someone who many people will know for his radio show.
Hirsty's Daily Dose.
Capital.
Generally cloudy and cool today for Wednesday, 4th of June. Take a brolly. Outbreaks of rain all day. 13, the high Ed Sheeran. Afternoon all, I'm Hirsty and this is Hit 40 UK, the UK's biggest commercial chart show. Now, last week's guest, Justin Timberlake, is the current ruler of Hit 40 UK's chart with Sexy Back. But can my guest today, Robbie Williams, steal his crown with Rude Box?
Mr. Robert Peter Williams.
Hello, sir.
Hello, how are you?
I'm all right, man. I'm good.
Good.
I'm good.
Radio presenter Simon Hirst. He's hosted Commercial Radio's Top 40 chart. He's best known as the host of Weekday Breakfast on Capital Yorkshire until June of this year. But tonight, in an exclusive interview for this programme, he tells me he is changing his gender and will live life as a woman. He's already halfway through gender reassignment treatment and this week has changed his name to Stephanie. This is his first interview where Simon has been addressed as Stephanie. So why tell the world now?
Because I got to a point in my life where I had to stop doing what I was doing to have some time out to focus on me, because I've devoted my entire life to radio. And
from what age?
I knew that I wanted to be on the radio from about eight or nine. And I was just obsessed with the thing. I think you can understand yourself that radio is such a wonderful medium, and it's so emotive and relatable, and I adore it. I adore it. I feel so comfortable sat here in this room with you. This is my natural environment, and this is why I'm here, because radio is where I'm at home. It's where I feel most comfortable, in front of this thing here.
Yeah.
Hiya.
And you look comfortable, that's the
thing. Thank you, yeah.
And so as that little boy at 8 or 9 years of age, that's what you wanted to do. And the great thing is, the lovely thing is, you achieved your dream. Now, how did you get there? Age 12, you...
I started working at a radio station in Leeds, age 12, because I used to ring the DJs up all the time. Constantly ringing them up, asking for dedications and stuff like that.
I'm worried that our stories are going to be similar. So, so did I. So did I.
James Whale used to do a show, and the first hour of his talk show was do-it-yourself dedications. I got barred from ringing up because I was on too much every night. Yeah. Every night. And eventually I wrote to all the DJs, and a lovely guy called Paul Stead, he invited me to come in and sit in on his show, and then I went in, and then I started going in every weekend from about October 1997, so I was about 12, yeah. And at that time, radio was a very different place. You know, kids could go in the radio station and help out, and I'd get a fiver here and there to go and put some records away in the record library. But I was around great talent then, and I learned so much from these people.
Any big names? Back then?
Back then, I think James Whale was probably the big name, because he did his ITV show, which used to be on the James Whale radio show, which was on. And I worked as a runner on that, collecting faxes once or twice, and that was really exciting. There's a TV show which is on the radio, which is coming from the radio station. Oh, it's like, I'm in heaven. Geek. Loved it. Adored it.
And you got a taste of it, and then so that's what you definitely wanted to do.
Absolutely. There's never been any plan B in my life. It was always, I love radio. I love the medium. I love the nuts and bolts of it. I love the technical side of it. I love all of it. Every bit of the business I adore.
What was your first gig on air then?
Radio Air.
How old?
I was 16. Yeah. And I covered for a really good friend of mine, Neil Rudd. Now I covered his overnight show, and one of the first songs I played was Billy Ray Cyrus and "Achy Breaky Heart," and I said Billy Ray Cyrus. Oh, God. I mean, I get names wrong now on purpose.
Yeah.
But back then I was mortified when I turned the mic. I was Cyprus. Argh! But you do, you know, you, when you're young, the nerves get going, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
But I got to a point there where I'd kind of felt I'd gone too far. That radio station, I come to a point where I felt I was still looked upon as a child, so I had to send a lot of demo tapes out that you do, and I got some other work and went to work at a radio station in York for a bit.
And then it all soared, right?
It did, yeah, it did. Because I just wanted to be on a radio station. It didn't matter which one. It could be commercial, it could be BBC. I just wanted to be on the radio. And but it just, it soared to the national chart show and the biggest commercial radio station breakfast show outside London. Huge, yeah. It really did. It really did soar. I was very lucky. Very, very, very lucky.
And it's that, you know, I wanted to get a sense from you of how important radio is, because, of course, radio is about the audience, the listeners forming a bond and a relationship with
Absolutely.
Right? And what you want to be, if you're a half-decent presenter, and you are, is you want to be yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And there was many times on the air in recent years where I nearly said, you know, that I'm transgender. And I always wanted to say that because I knew from around the same time that I wanted to be on the radio that I knew that something wasn't right. You can put your hands together like that with your fingers, but and that locks together. But I always felt like, you know, your middle of your fingers, the knuckle bit there, I always felt like when you move them around like that, if I'm kind of describing this better, I felt like that. I didn't feel complete. I didn't feel like it locked. I felt like a square peg in a round hole. But I didn't know why. And I couldn't really work that out. There was a girl who lived around the corner from me. And she had a pair of roller skates, and they were yellow. They weren't pink or anything like that. They were yellow with blue stripes on, and I remember distinctly, it's imprinted on my brain, I remember being sat on the curb where the pavement is in the road and putting them on, and then I'm going to go on them, and it feeling, this felt normal, this felt right, this, because I had no brothers or sisters or anything like that, so the only female in the house was my mum, and it felt really normal. And then I remember
Harold.
Eight or nine. I must be 8 or 9. Around that time. It's around that time. Most definitely is. 8 or 9. Because I started, as we call it, playing out on the street. Yeah, it's around that age. It's definitely around that age. And then my mum had a pair of...
I'm trying to work out in my head whether you have any real understanding.
I don't think you do. Back then, as a child, just something felt right. It felt better. And then there was some. My mum had some old brown knee length boots that she used to have, probably in the '70s or something like that. Because this is '80s, and they were in an outbuilding near in our house where they used to keep the coal years ago. And they were in there. I remember hunting for those. And then my parents used to go out on a weekend, because back then, my parents would go out to a working men's club on a weekend or something like that. And at 10, 12 years old, I was in the house on my own. So I was in my mum's wardrobe. And, you know, there was never anything connected with that which would turn me on or anything. It just made me feel, I just felt better. I felt like this is how I should be.
So as a 10-year-old child, when your mum and dad went out of the house, you would be in your mum's bedroom trying on her clothes.
I had a little studio in my bedroom. My dad was in bands in the '70s and eighties, and he fixed TVs during the day, so I had access to equipment. So I'd create a little studio, and I'd be in there working or playing around with my records. And before I knew it, I was in my mum's wardrobe. It's like another person took me over. It's like this person sits inside of me, and she was. I just before I knew it, I was in the wardrobe. Before I knew it, I was dressed. Before I knew it, I was meticulously taking her makeup out of her makeup case and putting it on and meticulously putting it back so it didn't look like it had been moved. And then there was one point I didn't put something back.
Did you look at yourself in the mirror?
Yeah.
What did you see?
I saw what I wanted to see back. I saw a girl, and that's how I felt. I remember walking around the street. It was late at night, and my mum's shoe size was a size 4, and I must have been about a size 6 then. I remember squeezing into a pair of shoes and walking around the block, and it was late at night. And this is when I'm about 12, something like that.
Late at night?
Late at night, yeah.
On your own?
On my own. In Barnsley.
You see, you're painting a very vivid picture in my head now. So there you are, alone, because it's your secret.
Yeah.
It's late at night.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have any protection around you.
No.
And you're nearly wanting it to be public, even at that early age. Mm. You're not doing it in your bedroom. You're walking outside.
No. I mean, I went out shopping as soon as I passed my driving test at 17. I was going to the local shopping centre and walking around and going into Barnsley Town Centre. My mum had a wig in the 60s, and my then girlfriend, who I told about this actually when I was 17, I think she was 16, and she was wonderful. She was really supportive, and I remember telling her, and she was just, she was amazing, and she made sure the wig looked okay for me, and yeah. But then one day I really needed to tell my mum, because I had these highs and these lows.
Let me interrupt you for a moment, because we'll take this chronologically. When you hit puberty, it's a big time, isn't it?
Massive,
we all know that in any of our lives. And, I remember puberty. It was quite cliched for me, so I went off the rails slightly and didn't talk to mum and dad and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Everything's behind closed doors in your bedroom.
Yeah. But also, you wouldn't know now, but I wanted to do the weights. I wanted to look like a man. I wanted hair on my body. I wanted to play rugby. What happened to you?
I don't particularly remember wanting to. There was nothing in my. I didn't really think, why aren't I developing breasts? I don't remember that thought. I remember being envious of women, but I wasn't desperately looking in the mirror going, grow, grow, grow. I think I just knew I was, I was a boy's body. But, mentally and emotionally, my brain, it's the hormone imbalance, isn't it, when we're created in the womb. That's what causes it. And, I knew my brain was like this. And I was really hungry for information. I remember there was a Bond girl, Caroline Cossey, and Tula. And I remember seeing something on TV about her. There was the George to Julia documentary that was on in the early 80s. I remember seeing that as well. And this was just information. It was data. I needed it, because there was no internet.
And had you worked out by that stage?
Oh, yeah, I knew. I knew in my mind that I would do this one day. And it was just having the courage.
So already in your early teens, you'd worked out you're in the wrong body.
Oh, yeah.
That's a hell of a secret to keep carrying.
Yeah, but radio was so huge to me. That helped me suppress it. That was the fix. That was the denial.
Come on, Simon, suppression does things to you. It messes you up, doesn't it?
Oh, completely, yeah, completely.
So how was it messing you up, that secret? You wanted to tell your mum and dad, presumably.
Yeah. I told my mum one day, and, I was dressed in her clothes when she came home from work.
She caught you then?
No, I knew. I was doing it on purpose. And she, I remember being stood in her bedroom, mum and dad's bedroom, looking out down the street, and she got dropped off in a car. And I remember distinctly her walking towards the house.
How old?
16.
Right.
17, 16. Okay. I came downstairs. I sat down in the chair in the living room. She walked through the front door. She took one look at me, and it didn't go down too well.
What did she say?
I think it was a shock. She went, go and get changed. Just go and get changed. And it was one of those things that just kind of wasn't spoke about again, which was a shame. It kind of put me back in the closet, so to speak. But I was, you know.
That's a pivotal moment in your life. That's you telling your mother,
yeah,
this is who I am.
Yeah, it was.
And with all due respect, is she still alive?
She's not. I lost my mum last year, and she was really supportive. She knew. As I've grown older, told her about it, and she was brilliant.
But at that point, she didn't accept you.
I think it was just a shock for her.
Yeah, of course it was.
A massive shock, of course. And I think for her that was quite difficult. But what I'd find later, when we didn't talk about this, is the fact that when she would buy something, she'd show me it. So it was almost like she was reaching out to me then to say, look, it's okay. But by that point, I'd kind of closed down a little bit. I was going, no, it's fine.
What about your dad?
I only told my dad earlier this year. My dad is a wonderful human being. I adore my dad. If I would have remained male until old age, my dad's 66, I would have ended up like him, because he's fantastic. He's wonderful. And he said to me when I told him earlier this year, and he said, you're my child, as long as you're happy, I don't care.
Did he know? Had your mum told him?
I think she had. I think it had been mentioned. But he said to me, I don't care, and I'm not going to be graphic here or use bad language, so I'll change it. But he said to me, I don't care if you've got two willies and a lady garden, you're my child. and he was he was more blunt than that, but he was brilliant. He was wonderful. And the other day I was around at my dad's, and a female friend that he knows rang him, and he picked the phone up and went, "Ah, my other daughter, hello." So I'm like, wonderful, fantastic.
Yeah, but it is wonderful, isn't it? Because it must be incredibly difficult for a parent. For your dad, he has a son. Yeah. And that's a big change.
It is, it is.
And again, it's another pivotal moment where, are you going to be rejected? Because some people are. And he didn't.
He didn't.
What did it feel like?
Oh, amazing. I'd got to that point where I started hormones in January, and had been on the pathway to this for a few years. And I told girlfriends over the years that, you know, I felt like this, but I wasn't going to do anything about it. You know, I've got a pretty, as I saw it, charmed life. I was very lucky, and I couldn't lose radio. It's too important to me. So they kind of understood that. And I've dated some amazing and been with some amazing women who have just been so, so wonderful. There's been certain ones who have really kind of just helped me. My friend Victoria, my friend Catherine, and lots of, there's going to be people listening to this, and I'm not mentioning them. I do forgive, please forgive me. But just people have been wonderful, really, really, really so helpful and understanding and accepting. Every single person I have told in my life has been accepting. It's not as if I put the phone down or I've said goodbye to them face to face and not seen them again and they've kept their distance. Every single person I have told has rang me again, seen me again.
When you were going out with girls, were you jealous of them?
Yes. Yes. When I was in bed with a... It's interesting because a lot of my exes I'm still friends with. And whenever I've spoken to them about how it was sexually with me, they've always said, "You just weren't there. In the moment, you weren't there mentally. You weren't there." And I wasn't. And I know I wasn't, because I was envious. I wanted to be where they were. And that's not right. And it was only the thought of being where they were that would bring me to climax. And I always worried. This was one thing that was in my head, and I don't know whether this is just me, but I always thought that if I did have children and we made a baby, it was made wrong, because I was thinking of that instead of thinking of creating something. Does that make sense? And yeah, and I always thought that's why I never got married and I never had children, because I didn't want to bring them into this. I didn't want to. No, there's nothing really. You know, it is what it is. But I always felt that, as a woman myself, you know, you have an ideal, perfect, you know, marriage, relationship, whatever, and you didn't want this. It's not something, but you have to deal with it. You have to deal with the cards that you're given, don't you? And if I had have done that, I would have just dealt with it, and it had to be that. But I tried to do morally the right thing.
And during all of this time, when you know, you're not completely being yourself. You're being with girls and you're thinking of something else. You're being with your parents and you're being someone other than who you want to be. How does the pressure manifest itself in you, in your head?
Imagine someone poking you in the arm constantly, just tapping you like that. And it's like that every single day. From the minute I woke up to the minute I went to sleep, it was always there. The thought was there in my head constantly. I'd drive home in the car, I'd be driving on the M1, and I could have just turned the wheel into the central reservation. I didn't, of course. Or I'd scream going, "Ah! Make it stop!" Or I remember sitting in my kitchen, rocking backwards and forwards, going, "Just make this stop. Make it stop. Go away. Leave me alone." And I felt like she was eating me up inside. And
so you would scream out loud?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
It's such an... you know, they're not shocking words, but if anybody listening to this thinks about this, to actually scream out loud on your own,
yeah,
it's a pretty profound, deep thing to do, actually.
Yeah. It was tearing me apart, and radio was the release, you know. being in my box, I call the studio my box, because if I ever came outside the studio, someone would say, get back in your box. Being in the studio for me is my home, and that was my release. And the 4 hours started, my thoughts about this started to creep into my release, into the 4 hours on the air.
Yeah, but on air, you're Simon.
Yeah.
And you're building up a persona, and you're building up an image that then is your brand, is your trade, is your relationship with the audience.
I was always very honest. I was always very, there's going to be people listening to this that have never heard of me, and there's going to be people that have heard of me and grew up listening to me. I made sure, apart from this one thing about me, I was just completely honest with every single detail that I ever said.
Except the most important thing in your life.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, thank you for your company tonight. You're in the middle of listening to our exclusive interview with the former radio presenter, Simon Hirst, who tonight has told me he is changing gender and will live life as a woman from tomorrow morning. That's how huge a moment this is in his life. We've heard about dressing up in his mother's clothes as a child, realizing he was a woman in a man's body, telling his mother and father, but sometimes screaming out loud for what was happening to him to stop. He has also told me about how radio was his life, but that he's eventually decided to come off air for the moment. I asked Simon why.
Because I needed to stop. If anyone's got up regularly early in the morning, you know, 4:45, 4:30, 4:45, 5:00, whatever, and you see 2 5-o'clocks in a day, it can jet lag you. You can feel constantly tired. You know, you work 7 days a week, don't you? You know that feeling of sometimes it's like.
But I couldn't do early mornings.
No, it does wreck you. And I'm nocturnal. I love being awake late at night. It's when I have my best ideas. So I did breakfast shows for nearly 15 years. So I clearly didn't have a good idea in 15 years. But But I got to a point where I was like, I need to stop. I've got to stop. I feel like a hamster on a wheel, constantly just every single day. It was like Groundhog Day. And I really got to a point. And I told my bosses at Global Radio, who own Capital, where I worked. And, you know, they were surprised. You know, everyone I tell is surprised. But, you know, they were supportive.
You told them what specifically?
That I'm transgender. And I'm going to be going through this process. And, you know, they were supportive of the process that I'm going through.
So they didn't want you to come off air?
I knew myself that I needed to take a break. This is massive. And I needed to have some time out myself.
Yeah, but it's not a coincidence, Simon, is it? That, you know, you're not just tired coming off air. You're coming off. Are you coming off air because you're frightened that people wouldn't accept you if you weren't Simon anymore? That's actually the question at the heart of this.
I didn't feel like I just needed to have some time out. Capital Global, you know, they've got a duty of care to all their staff, including me. And, you know, I suppose you kind of, if anything, you know, you need to kind of speak to them about that part of it. But, you know, my audience, we always do a lot of thinking in the shower, don't we? You know, you can stand in the shower, and I would always think of this about, think, oh god, are people going to accept this? Because you hear in the past, you know, growing up, you read stories in the newspaper, you saw certain things about people not being accepted, and you still today, and why don't people, you know, accept people for who they are? Society.
So why didn't you give your audience a chance? Were you frightened that they'd reject you? Because none of your friends did.
No, they didn't. And I only learnt that by telling people. And I've only learnt that recently by coming out to close family and friends.
So why take the break rather than stay on air and then see if they would have accepted you?
Because, you know, I'm sitting here now and telling you this on the radio, which is my natural environment, and I'm being honest now. But I needed to have some clarity, some time away from those early mornings, because it's the jet lag, isn't it? And I always knew that this was the right thing
for
me.
But you didn't ask for a different time slot, right?
No, I didn't ask for a different time
slot. So here's what I'm getting at.
I know.
Here's what I'm getting at.
Was the rejection from your audience, from the job you loved, was that possibly too much of a gamble? So somewhere you knew your parents would be all right, your friends would be all right, but we're strangers. Is that what this was?
There was an element, yes, there was an element of that in my mind. Would people accept me? And, but I'm me, I don't change. You know, the exteriors could change a little bit, but I'm still me. You know, I still broadcast the same way. I still say the same things. I've always had this, you know, I've always had this the female brain that I've got and emotions. I can't help that. That's biological. I can't change that. All I can do is make my body in line with my thoughts and my brain and everything. So, yes, I was, to a point, I was afraid of everyone. Everyone.
So what do you say to that audience who know you, who are listening now? What do you say to them? The people that grew up listening to you, that are so important to you. What do you say to them, Simon?
I'm still me. I'm still the person you listen to every single day. You know, when you were going to work in the morning, or whether you were reading my Facebook or Twitter, I'm still the same person. I'm just me. I'm just happy now. And isn't that what we all want? We all want to feel happy and complete. And for anyone to deny anyone else that is it's an unbearable thought, isn't it?
See, the comfortable expression that you've had over your face throughout the totality of this interview, actually, has disappeared when I've talked to you about the audience and how they might receive you.
It's scary.
It terrifies you, actually.
It does in some respects, yeah, but I'm not going away. I said earlier that there was, when I was a kid, there was never a plan B. I'm a broadcaster and there was never a plan B. I'm a broadcaster and an entertainer. It's what I do.
I want to ask you about your station, and you can tell me as much as you want to, or you don't. You say they were supportive. Would they have kept you on air?
I wanted to. I needed the time out. You know, they were supportive of the process I'm going through.
Will you go back? Will they have you?
We've not had any conversations in anything like that. You know, I've not had any conversations about me returning or anything like that at the moment. I only came off the air in June, and what we're now October. So yeah,
it's just because I'm in this business. These questions are in my head. Have they made you sign a confidentiality clause?
I know you're going to have to speak to Global about that. That's something that I can't really comment on. It'll
be actually interesting, and I can say this, and you don't need to, but it'll actually be really interesting if Global proactively release any type of statement of support, or can't wait to have you back, or anything like that, won't it? I would have thought that would be really interesting. Because it's in itself an interesting situation. Because what they have is a brand, and to be fair to them, that brand was known as a meal to their audience.
Yeah.
So therefore, would actually listeners want to listen to you if they have this image in their mind? And I'm asking the question openly. They have this image in their mind of a bloke, of a man called Simon.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
So would they want you?
But like I said, I'm just me. I'm the same person. I'm the same person, you know. I'm not going to flounce around in flowery dresses all day. You know what I mean, you know. I'm just me. I'm just a human being. I still love people. I still care for people the same way. My parents raised me to treat people the way I like to be treated. Nothing changes. And for anyone who's going through this, or anyone who's thinking of going through this, you know, we don't change. We don't. Yes, the exterior changes and it's, but we're still the same people. You know, we love people. We care for people, whether, you know, we have children or we don't have children, whatever, you know, we should be accepted. We're just human beings and we all come in different shapes and sizes, colors, whatever.
When are you going to stop being Simon in public?
Well, I'm sitting here now talking to you, and I'm dressed in a shirt and jeans. And this is probably pretty much the last time I'll probably be on the air as Simon. I'm guessing. So from now, probably want to wake up tomorrow.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, probably want to wake up tomorrow. Why wait long? Why wait any longer?
What a big moment.
Why hide?
What a big moment in your life.
Yeah. I was posting a picture the other night. I was sticking something on... I was playing with Vine, actually, where you can video something for 6 seconds and it loops.
I'm not that old. I know what Vine is. Yes, I know, but I'm old-fashioned. I know what Vine is.
No, but people listening may not know. So I was
I saw the way you looked at me. I know what Vine is. I've never used it. I know what it is.
But you know what it is.
Right.
It's one of those apps that you download that you often want to go, no, I don't know. I'll leave it there. It makes me look cool. And I was going to do something with me, but, I've got a face of makeup, and I can't do that with my face because I've got makeup on. I'll do something. I'll hold something. No, I can't. I've got nail polish on. Ugh. My ceiling lights are in front of me. I'll video my ceiling lights whilst singing a song. And that's me hiding. That's hiding. Why should I hide? I was going for a meeting in London last week, and I was dressed. And I was just in a dress, nice little day dress. And there were some builders outside my house working. And they were mixing concrete on the drive. And they were doing an extension. And they kept disappearing with the concrete. And they kept coming back too quick because I couldn't get out of the house. And I was just afraid. Why am I afraid? Why? Why the hell am I afraid to leave my own front door?
Because some people, because some people are going to shout weirdo, because some people are going to think that it's just fundamentally wrong to be a man pretending to be a woman is what they're going to think.
That's what they think, but I'm not pretending. This is biological. Look it up. Read about it. You know, we all need to be educated on things. I love learning things. You know, why can't the public...
So educate me, because I don't know enough. So are you telling me that you believe, well, you educate me. I don't want to be patronising.
No, no, no.
Are you telling me that you've got a female brain?
Yes.
And if you were to look into the biology of your brain, what would the experts say?
Well, there has been research done where they've taken people who suffer from, the medical term is gender dysphoria, and they've looked at brains of... male, female, and transgender. And there is similarities, huge similarities between the female brain as well, or vice versa, whichever way you are going. So say, for instance, the male to female transsexual, or a female to male, you know. And there is proof that, you know, that it is a hormone imbalance within the womb. There's a surge of estrogen, a surge of testosterone, and sometimes there's an imbalance, and that is, you know, sometimes... one could be born hermaphrodite or transgender. And this is what I've learned from, you know, reading and learning and listening over the years. And, I can't... if I could take a pill and make this go away, give me it. I'll buy it in bulk, get it in. I'll clear my garage and I'll store it all in there and everything will be great and that's it. But that doesn't exist. I need to be who I truly am on the inside, on the outside. I can't keep waking up every day going, oh, God. Jeans, T-shirt, pair of Converse again. I can't do it. I just want to express myself the way I feel I should express myself.
Hormone therapy takes how long? 18 months?
Yeah, 18 months, 2 years, but it can take a maximum, you know, even after that, the effects of HRT, whether you're male to female or female to male, whether you're taking estrogen or testosterone.
And how long have you been at it? Have you started?
I started in January.
Okay.
And
what happens first?
I don't know whether some people say they feel certain things and that's a kind of placebo effect. I don't know. I'm not sure. But within the first 3 months, I started to feel like, you know, I mentioned earlier about me fitting between, yeah, when I lock my fingers together like that. I felt like, oh, I'm starting to feel better. When you lock your fingers together, I just started to feel better. And within a few weeks after that, there was tingling around the breast area. I'm currently sporting little A-cup breasts.
I can see them.
There they are, yeah. And I'm wearing shirts with pockets on because that's the best way I've got to disguise them.
Do you not want to show them off?
Well, I do, but sometimes when I'm around people that don't know, again, it's hiding. I'm hiding again.
So you're saying from tomorrow that stops?
Yeah, yeah. I really do need to start wearing a bra every day, to be fair. And the one thing about this for me is, and I've been saying this to friends, after 30 years of this doing my head in, I'm just gonna get on with it and almost not laugh at myself, but joke about it. This is a celebration. So I'm kind of I kind of joke about it with my friends.
Let me ask you about your voice. Because you're Stephanie from tomorrow, correct?
Yeah.
And when you're Stephanie, you talk in a different voice?
Well, I've not particularly got a massively deep voice, but I'm in the key of C, which is, you know, the native female range. I used to, on the air years ago, try to deepen my voice because I was always a bit squeaky. And I'm guessing it will. I'm having speech therapy. I was thinking there's an operation in Korea where they do a slight thing with your vocal cords, but it's my voice, and I still want to have the ability to be able to, you know, really drop down if I want to do silly voices and stuff like that, because, you know.
But if you're being you, why is it important to have a higher voice? Now, that I don't get.
Why don't you get it?
I don't get it because the whole point of you being you is that everything about you is then natural. So why want to go to speech therapy and distort your natural voice? Why do that?
Because there is society again. It's acceptance, isn't it?
Yeah.
Again, it comes down to society.
But is it not down to you being accepted for who you are rather than the perception of what you want to sound like so they'll be happy?
Yeah, but I feel like, you know, if I'm going through this to change the exterior, I do at least want to sound female.
Okay.
And it's all about pitch and resonance, and because I'm fascinated with sound, I do know at the minute it's not particularly great, and I'm not really trying with it at the minute, but it, you know, it's there, and it...
When you do try?
If I do try, I kind of get
can
it...
Can I hear how Stephanie sounds?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a little bit of a studio at home, so I've kind of been practicing a little bit, but it's not there, and it... What I've learned from people who have transitioned as well, it only kind of really gets better when you use it every single day because the voice is a muscle, of course.
So can I hear you as Stephanie?
Yeah. I've got to really think about this. Hello, hang on, hi. If I try and speak, God, it sounds awful, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't.
Hello, hi. If I speak like that, I need something to read. I'll read the screen. When changing your... When changing your password, please do not... No, I can't do it. I can. Hang on. When changing your password, please do not forget to change it on... No, it doesn't sound great, does it? And I do this at home. This is what I do. I sit reading shampoo bottles and try reading them. But it's going to take time. It just takes time.
You see, it's not about what I think, right? So I'm completely irrelevant in this.
Yeah.
But you know, there's a huge part of me kind of... It's just a huge part of me wanting to say to you, why not just let that come naturally?
Yeah, I think that's it. And it has got, you know, I mean, I can get really down there.
Yeah.
You know, when I was...
I don't think I can sit here as a man and not ask you about the penis.
And, yeah. And
because, you know...
That's interesting.
It certainly has defined me for the majority of my life. So what happens when you're wanting everything on the exterior?
On the exterior?
To be female. What happens?
Gender reassignment.
Have you hated it all your life?
I've not. And I think it varies with some people. Some people, when they look at their genitalia, they're disgusted. I, on the other hand, think, well, I've got this. It's all right. I'd rather not have it. I think we've all men have done this, you know. They've always tucked it between their legs sometimes, going, ooh, look, lady garden. And yeah, when I do that, it makes me feel better. It's not there. So that's not right, is it? Why do I think that? Why has that always been the case?
So will you eventually have it removed?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. But it's not, is it what's between your legs that's important? Yes, I will have it removed. Yes, I will. But it's not really what's important between your legs. It's you know, it's who you are. And, yeah, it will go. Sometimes when you tuck it between your legs and you sit down and then those two things shoot up, that's a bit painful. Ow! These are little things that you do go through. And it's interesting, you know. I'm slowly, my female friends and people who know a female, I'm slowly getting, you know, invited into the female club, if you know. And the conversations that I've had are very different because I'm being accepted into this club. And it's, you know, it feels like a fit. It just feels right.
I want to go back to tomorrow because what a day. And by the way, thank you so much for trusting us with this interview because, thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you for allowing me to be here.
Is the best way of me putting it. So tomorrow, Stephanie.
Yeah. I've changed my name already by Deepol. So, yeah. My mum always said that I was going to be called Nicola if I was a girl. And my name was Simon Neil Hurst. And I still want to keep my initials because that's, you know, it's important to me that. So SNH, so I've gone Stephanie Nicola Hurst. And some people in my position, you know, want to eradicate their past and forget about it. I'm very proud of, you know, what I've done in my past. And, yeah, I'm not going to erase that or try and get rid of it or anything like that. I can't. I don't want to. It's who I am. I'm proud of the people I've met. I'm proud of the people I've been with. I'm proud of, you know, what I've done. And you should never have regrets.
So you're lying in bed tomorrow morning. You're waking up. You open up your eyes. Describe to me.
Excitement, I think. Yeah, excitement. I'll wake up and just go, right, okay. Here we go then. It'll be nice not having to go to bed. If I've painted my nails and been out that day, I won't have to think, oh, I've got to take them off. Damn. And that would really, but all I can keep is the ones on my toes painted because my shoes will cover them up. And usually I look at my toes before I go to sleep and go, oh.
So don't tell me what you can't do anymore. Tell me what you can do tomorrow morning. You get up.
I can be myself. And that for me encapsulates everything. I can be myself. I can be who I am. I can express myself. I don't have to hide anymore. I don't have to worry anymore. I'm me. I'm not going to stop doing what I do. I'm a human being. You know, I'm a woman. And that's it. I can't change things. All I can do is make myself feel complete. And shouldn't we... We should never deny that to ourselves. You know, whether you're in a violent or unhappy relationship, you need to change that. If you're in a job where you're unhappy, you need to change that. If you don't feel you're in the correct gender, you change that. Each of those takes courage, doesn't it? And sometimes, you know, there's varying scales of courage. But to each of us, they're all massive, aren't they, depending on what we're going through. And, you know, sometimes you just got to go, you've got to bite the bullet and do it. And, you know, it was terrifying pressing stop on my career or temporarily, but I just needed that. I needed that time out.
Is this the first radio interview where you'll be addressed as Stephanie?
Yeah.
Stephanie, thank you.
Thank you, Stephen.